Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Governor Tony Evers delivered his State of the State address and teases a series of budget proposals, some that have faced opposition before. Coming up, what issues we could see common ground on. Plus, GOP lawmakers introduce a series of bills this week targeting immigration, student testing standards, and more. And a diversity chancellor at the UW-Madison is removed from his position. We'll tell you why. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for January 24th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We're going to start with Governor Evers' primetime address this week. Of course, a State of the State address, where we know that he lays out a series of his priorities and teases a lot of budget proposals. We're going to talk about some of the big ticket items that he talked about that are going to be in his budget here on the full screen. That is a $300 million investment in mental health services. A lot of those are going to be school-based mental health services. $66 million to support crime victim services. $145 million for universal school meals and replacing water fountains in school districts. $500 million for child care. Now, these are all very similar themes that we repeatedly hear from the governor that he wants to invest in. But of course, the biggest hurdle going forward is going to get support from the GOP legislature when budget negotiations get underway. One thing I do want to highlight that stood out to me, at least, JR, is he did tease a few weeks ago that he was going to announce some of the sweeping gun reform measures. And he did. Of course, we have here on the screen $66 million in crime system services. But he also laid out additional gun measures in his budget and called on lawmakers, hey, especially after this Madison deadly school shooting that we just had, can we try and find some common ground? So let's just first hear the governor talk about gun control measures before we dive into more details of his speech.
Folks, Wisconsinites sent us here to see big problems and fix them. We cannot let common sense get lost in debates over whether basic policies could have prevented the most recent shooting, or the one before that, or the one before that. We aren't here in Madison to quibble about the semantics of the last shooting. We are here to do everything we can to prevent the next one. Yes. So we can do better than doing nothing. This legislature must do better than doing nothing.
So stay on the topic of guns. Some of those measures included, you know, exempting sales tax on gun safes, you know, in an effort to try and prevent, you know, kids or someone else to get their hands on someone's weapon. And, you know, similar themes, universal background checks, red flag laws. We know those are not going to get anywhere. But, you know, the bill that I just mentioned about sales tax exemption for gun safes, that was actually a Republican and bipartisan bill that was introduced earlier this week as well. So maybe there could be some movement on that.
Yeah. Evers also wants an exemption for other safety measures. We talked to the co-author, one of the co-authors of that bill this week. He said, I'm open to the idea, but I'm kind of hesitant to expand it beyond what we have. Want to get something done. But look, the speech in general, the feedback I got was a lot of stuff that's popular with the public, but never going to become law, and which has kind of been Evers' hallmark in these speeches for the last few years. It's actually not a bad place to be, though, and this is what I heard from people. Look, the governor not going to win awards for his presentation anytime soon, but honestly, the last few governors, we haven't had like a Eagles soar, Harley's roar speech like Tommy Thompson used to do in a long time. This is kind of like a checklist of like what I want to do, what my priorities are. And for Evers, he's checking off things that people like, right? They're not going to get done, but people like them. And he's got this hockey goalie in Robin Voss and Devin Lemieux. GOP leaders will knock them all down. Okay, so there's no risk for Evers in talking about, I like all this stuff, you like all this stuff, we should get it done, but they're preventing me from it. Harry Truman, doing it in Congress, 1948. You know, it's never really been a bad thing for executives to say, look, these guys are the problem, not me. You look ahead a little bit, the question would be, if Evers runs in 26 and wins and has a democratically controlled legislature, would he actually turn this rhetoric into policy? It's a long way away. Other thing to note, he took some time in speech to talk about tax cuts. Then we proposed one, talked about that sales tax exemption, also exempting medications from the sales tax. But there wasn't like his middle class tax cut plan. it drives Republicans nuts to hear Evers take credit for what they believe are things that they pass and put on his desk. That said, the combination of Evers talking about popular things, taking credit for tax cuts, and giving a speech in the biggest bully pulpit in the state, it's, you know, not a bad platform for him. The question becomes, will any of it get done in the budget they introduce February 18th?
Right, and he teases all these millions of dollars that he wants to spend, well, because lawmakers, the legislature, has a $4.5 billion surplus to work with right now, and everyone really wants a piece of that, right? Of course, Republicans have their priorities, the governor, Democrats, you know, state agencies, everyone wants a slice of the pie. But like you hinted, too, Republicans are like, we're not going to expand the size of government. It's kind of same rhetoric that we hear from GOP leaders. We're not going to, it's a liberal wish list is what Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called Evers' speech. And then he laid out what his priorities are when he spoke to reporters afterwards. That includes higher education standards with any state funding increases for schools, deporting illegal immigrants who have committed crimes, and providing $1,000 in tax relief to every taxpayer. That was kind of the tease to what we expect to see in the GOP tax plan, but we didn't get any details. Let's just hear from Speaker Voss first in his initial response to Evers' speech.
What we heard tonight was Governor Evers' longest State of the State address, and it was chock full of liberal wishes, empty promises, and a whole lot of things that are not going to happen in Wisconsin. What I think we heard here was a bunch of empty promises that will not be able to be delivered without either massive tax increases or massive spending cuts. And I don't think that we're never going to approve massive tax increases, and I don't think he's going to support massive spending reductions. So I don't think any of them are realistic.
Want to go back to the discussion of tax cuts, but it is probably something we're going to keep talking about for many weeks here on the show, but we still don't have a plan yet, right? I mean, we're almost towards the end of January. It's pretty unlikely we haven't seen that yet, but also what could be a huge sticking point is that Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue and Speaker Voss kind of have different ways of how they want to issue tax relief.
So we've heard Voss say the surplus around $4 billion projected as of June 30th, I'm sorry. We'll get new numbers from Fiscal Bureau probably next week. There's an update on how things look, but Robin said roughly $2 billion of that should go toward tax cuts because that's the size of the tax cuts that Evers vetoed this past session. Well, Robin talked about last year doing a tax cut for retirement income. Devin Lemahue said, I want to do it across the board, tax cut that impacts everybody. Okay, where's the plan? They've talked about how they want to get Evers pinned down on a tax plan before the budget. Now, you know, they want to see how much he'd be willing to sign before they commit to his spending increases. Talking to people in the Capitol, there's very little question in their minds that Evers would not sign on to a tax cut ahead of the budget, because why give up your leverage? If he gives them a tax cut, what's the incentive for them to give him what he wants in the budget, right? Still, where's the plan? Maybe it comes out in the next week or two, they get it done sometime this spring, but the question is, can they agree on something? Because we're looking at the end of January, next Friday, and there's not much coming to the legislature right now. They're not exactly being very aggressive in passing bills, so where's the plan, guys?
Right. It's very quiet in the Capitol. Of course, Wednesday was busy with the State of the State, but typically we start to see public hearings on bills. Now, we are seeing, you know, kind of a slew of bills that we're going to get to in a little bit in the show of what we can expect over the next few weeks of what the discussion will be like. But, yeah, no real hearings on the agenda, which is a little odd and typical this time of year in the legislative session. One bill that we do want to talk about that we know is likely to come next week is one that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said is going to be targeting immigration. Now, he just gave reporters a little bit of a tease of what that's going to look like. And he said the bill would force law enforcement to cooperate with immigration officials who are carrying out deportations of those who are in the country illegally. Of course, this comes just days, actually just hours after a flurry of executive orders from President Trump that, of course, target deportations and also sending more, you know, securities, more troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. So let's, you know, talk about this, because to me, this is timely because I've talked to police departments in Beloit and Janesville, who have issued statements, some last week and earlier this year, saying, look, we're going to just tell residents that we're not going to enforce, you know, or follow along with ICE if they come here. We're not going to get involved in those type of things. You know, we're here for your safety. And basically, they're kind of just saying we're not going to engage with ICE officials. So this could be in response to that, to try and force them to cooperate. But law enforcement agencies that I haven't talked to yesterday say, well, hey, if there is someone who is here that has committed a serious crime and they should not be here, yes, we will cooperate. But just generally, generally, we're not going to be the boots on the ground for these federal officials.
Remember, Evers took part of his speech to kind of say, remind people we are a state built by immigrants, that, you know, we have, he's been warning that our dairy industry, for example, and his words would collapse without immigrant labor. So the governor's kind of pushing back a little bit on what Trump is doing. Also worth knowing that there are politics involved here. I know, shocker, with the Capitol, but Robin Voss made a comment in one of the interviews I did with him last year about how these Democrats who won these seats, these swing seats in November, these new maps, he's going to see if they really are going to be moderate Democrats or they're going to be, in his mind, liberal Madison-type Democrats. So these bills, whether the governor signs them or not, might put some of these guys on record. Where do you stand? It's a hot issue right now. The question of Democrats nationally is, one, what message do they kind of have to push back on Trump? And two, does Trump go too far for people? Are they happy with the stuff he's doing, or is it starts to kind of get to like, well, I'm not comfortable with this anymore?
Right, and we also heard Evers call on lawmakers to find a bipartisan solution on immigration. What that would look like, not sure, but this is right now Republicans' response of that they want law enforcement to basically aid federal officials if and when they come here on the grounds to carry out some raids. All right, speaking of the topic of immigration, we're going to talk now about Wisconsin joining the birthright citizenship lawsuit that actually was just challenged in court this week, and a judge already ruled it unconstitutional. So unclear how this lawsuit will carry out, but we know the Trump administration is likely to appeal this. But this is what the issue is over. Wisconsin joined earlier this week is one of 20 states and cities suing to block Trump's executive order that he signed on Monday that would end birthright citizenship for certain people born in the U.S. So Attorney General Josh Call that said when we talked to him earlier this week that Democrats are also looking into the other dozens of executive orders Trump issued to see what else he may challenge. So let's just hear a listen from the Attorney General first.
We know that nationwide there are over 100,000 kids who are citizens who potentially could be denied citizenship because of the actions of the Trump administration. I don't have a precise number for Wisconsin, but certainly we're talking about hundreds of people who are impacted. And these are, again, these are people who under our law for over 100 years have been considered American citizens. So Donald Trump is trying to essentially deny citizenship to people who, had they been born prior to his administration, unquestionably would be citizens. So part of my role as Attorney General is to protect the rights of Wisconsinites. That's what we are doing in this case.
Because of President Trump teasing so many actions he's going to take on day one, I bet, you know, this was already ready, especially a lot of attorney generals across the country being prepared and bracing themselves of what they're going to file legal action against. And we already knew that Call said he's basically prepared to file more lawsuits heading into this next administration.
Well, just saying before that Democrats had to figure out, like, what's too far, what's their message about immigration. Here's one that there's a little bit of polling I've seen so far that showed people in general in the country believe in birthright citizenship, so there's not really shaky ground for Democrats to kind of push this issue. Now, you know, the question is what the courts are going to do. It could be a lengthy process. There's also the question of can a president really, via executive order, basically nix something in the Constitution or reinterpret it in the Constitution? I won't get too geeky on, you know, their legal stuff and the separation of powers, but interesting to watch. But still, again, for Democrats, where can you push back against Trump that won't alienate swing voters for you on this issue?
All right, and now we're going to move on to what we talked about a little bit earlier. Now we're seeing a lot of co-sponsorship memos go through the legislature, and these are the bills that are likely going to be public hearings, but of course nothing is on the docket quite yet, and one of them has to deal with DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, changing their testing standards. We've talked about this on the show before, so what this bill would do, and what a Speaker Voss kind of teased would be one of their first priorities, is this bill that would undo the changes by DPI that they made last year to the test score scale that determines whether students met academic performance levels. Senator John Jagler, we talked to him this week. He's a co-author of the bill and, of course, the chair of the Senate Education Committee, said the proposal would require DPI to use the federal scoring standards that were previously in effect and, of course, the ones that Governor Tony Evers, who was then state superintendent, enacted many years ago. Excuse me. So this, of course, is going to be an issue in the DPI race as well, because we already saw some of the candidates issue statements about this saying, we support this, we want to go back to the federal standards, and it's just going to put more heat on Underly because she has been widely criticized for this, while her agency and herself have long defended their move.
So the question I've kind of got is, so Evers has made clear he wasn't a fan of the change. argue there should have been more buy-in from others, more public conversation. Unleash pushed back, saying there were nearly 90 people who were involved in these conversations. Evers, I'm wondering, will that turn into, I would sign this bill? So let me explain that. Lots of times the governor, sometimes the governor says, I'm not a fan of this, but putting into state law, overriding the DPI superintendent's, state superintendent's authority, a different kind of conversation at times. So I'm kind of curious if this bill gets to the governor's desk, which likely it will. Robin Voss talked about it's a priority. Jack looks like he's going to move it. Will you really see the governor say, I'm going to sign this into law, right, and undercut the state superintendent, not just this one, but ones going forward with this authority?
And like you said, Voss said he wanted to get this done right off the bat. I think it's also just going to put pressure on Evers, who said he's not going to endorse in the DPI race, but if you do sign this bill before that race is over, it could get a little messy.
For what it's worth, Evers has not endorsed in any spring race in the last, I know, at least the last 5 years. In 2021,
correct,
did not endorse in that race, 2023 Supreme Court race. He has endorsed Crawford, the liberal candidate in the Supreme Court race this spring. That's kind of his MO, but the friction between the governor and Underlie has kind of like given people fodder to bring that up. And he said in one interview, he's absolutely not going to endorse this spring.
Yeah.
So somebody told me last week, you know, maybe you drop absolutely governor wouldn't make such a big deal, but by adding that kind of has a little emphasis by sitting this one out.
All right, we're going to move on to another Republican bill that made some headlines this week, and it's called the ballot removal bill. And what I mean by that is that it would allow candidates, like the whole issue with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., would allow them to remove their name from ballots much more easily because it would change state law. So this has been an issue, a big one, that made a lot of headway when RFK Jr. filed multiple lawsuits here in Wisconsin, but also several key swing states. But he did successfully get his name off, in Pennsylvania and other states, but not Michigan and Wisconsin. So what this proposal would do, it would require a candidate to submit a written statement to the Wisconsin Elections Commission. They would also have to pay a fine, but then they could get their name off the ballot. Let's just hear from one of the co-authors of the bill. That's Representative Stephan from the Green Bay area, talking about how it's just so widely odd to him and many others that the only reason you can remove your name right now under current law after you file nomination papers is if you died. So let's take a listen from him.
In the state of Wisconsin, the only way you can get off a ballot once you've submitted your nomination papers is to die. And I think that most people would agree that that's unusual. Boy, if you change your mind or you have a health issue or maybe just a change of heart, that you should have a mechanism of getting off as long as it's before those ballots are printed.
This would also address the issue because right now Wisconsin is an outlier because we have some of the most strictest laws when it comes to ballot removal. So this would kind of make it more streamlined for candidates.
So we remember this would only apply to at the presidential level to third party candidates. So Democrats, Republicans, different process. They're nominated by their parties at national conventions. They're forwarded to the state. They get on the ballot. This would be basically for an RFK, but it would apply down ballot other races. And Jacobs, who's the chair of the Elections Commission, raised this point. The filing deadline most years for a legislative race, for example, is June 1st. You'd have to move to withdraw your name before ballots are printed, which is not until later in the summer. Okay, what happens if two candidates, one Democrat, one Republican, for an assembly race, file nomination papers, nobody else can apply to run for the seat, and they both drop out? There's nobody to run for that office. So then you have to mount a write-in campaign. So how are you going to address that? Oh, by the way, if you get through the primary, right? What if you get through the primary? Then you decide how you want to drop out.
Right.
Then what happens? So there's this kind of scenario of you could leave an office. Now, most people, in fact, 99.99999% of people who run for state office are committed to it the second they have the papers. They're like, they are doing this for sure. But she raises questions like, what do you do in those situations? So see how that plays out. Also, if they have to tweak it to accommodate the Elections Commission and get Governor Evers on board, we'll see. But Kennedy's the only, in my 25 years here, the only presidential contender I can think of who's trying to get out of the race.
Right.
Nobody else has done this, so it's a very unique situation.
And he did it so close to the time that ballots, some communities were already printing them. You know, absentee voting was really like a few days before getting underway. So that was a whole issue. And, you know, you mentioned, too, about the time frame, because Ann Jacobs also told me the same thing, that she's fearful of, you know, what if ballots are already printed and someone drops out, then we have to go through that whole mess all over again and it's going to cost money. I asked Stefan, and what he said as well, as long as it's before ballots are printed. So he seemed open to maybe tweaking the bill so it would appease WEC, who actually was involved in, you know, the bill crafting of this proposal. Another thing that Ann Jacobs warned me about, which, you know, maybe you remember this happening, but it could possibly get some people to strategize. I'm talking about smaller communities, right? So if you collect all these signatures, you can only sign one person's signature form. So if you're in a small community of, say, 500 people, and you give all 500 people signatures, and then you drop out, and someone else wants to run, well, who are they going to get signatures from? So it's just kind of some of these scenarios, of course, haven't happened, but she's, you know, thinking forward, if these things do come up, that there may be some needed some amendments to the bill.
A little far-fetched, but, you know, I've heard the same theory. Oh, speaking of ballots being printed, so this afternoon there's going to be a hearing. A candidate for Jefferson County Circuit Court judge wants to run. There's a provision in the state constitution that says you must be a licensed attorney for 5 years prior to election or appointment to be a judge. She was licensed May 27th of 2020. The election is April 1st. The Elections Commission voted 4-2 last week to put her on the ballot, even though there's that requirement, and she doesn't meet it if you count the window from the time you become a lawyer until the election. Now, if the window is from the time a lawyer until you're sworn in, which would be August 1st, she'd be fine, but hearing 2 o'clock, Dane County Court to decide whether she should be on the ballot. Jefferson County printed 4,000 ballots just in case that take her name, don't have her name on, because there's a deadline on Monday for county clerks to get the ballots to local clerks on absentee ballots the next day, those requests on file.
And, you know, you can maybe think, are Jefferson County just preparing to what happened, you know, in the past with RFK, with ballots already printed? They're kind of getting ahead of themselves, but they're also, you know, kind of saving themselves from some
deadlines
work with the deadlines coming up. All right, let's get the stock picks this week. And we have two senators from Wisconsin in the stock picks this week. We're going to start with Rising. That's U.S. Senator Ron Johnson with his new committee assignment in D.C.
Kind of his dream job.
Yeah.
It's the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. Now, Ron Johnson's reputation for diving into, let's say, fringe theories sometimes outside the mainstream, okay? The question I've gotten from people this week is, will this committee go off the rails now because Ron Johnson will highlight all these kind of things that are out there? Democrats will tell you that if you listen to Ron Johnson on podcasts or on right-wing radio, he talks about stuff, in their words, crazy. It's crazy all the time. Republicans, though, are like, look, you know, Ron's part of the team. This is going to be a little more focused on things that are kind of pertinent to Donald Trump. They're going to help Republicans in general. Also raises the question, will it be forward-looking or backward-looking? This is a big thing in D.C. right now for Republicans. Are they going to focus on Joe Biden and Fauci and things that happened in the 2020 election? Or are they going to be looking forward a little bit? Are they going to rehash January 6th, right? Speaker Johnson announced this committee to go back and look at January 6th again, even though that's 4 years ago now. So is that helpful for Republicans in general? So there's that whole layer. You know, you got this nice gig. The second thing is, if you notice, Johnson's had a little pep in his step lately. He ran in 2010 to kill Obamacare and rein in federal spending the deficit. Neither's happened in 14 years of being there. Now, Republicans have a trifecta. They're talking about reconciliation bills and doing cuts. Johnson's out there pitching the idea of going back to pre-COVID-19 spending levels. There's talk in D.C. among leaders of doing one reconciliation bill or two. Now, reconciliation is this kind of very technical process about spending bills. You can pass with a straight majority in the Senate rather than 60 votes. It has to be all spending stuff, though. So there's talk about, do you do one bill with immigration in it, one with taxes? Do you one big, beautiful bill like Donald Trump wants? Johnson wants three. He's got some attention for it. He wants to do immigration and border wall in one, extend the tax cuts from 2017 another, and then do a third reconciliation bill that would just overhaul the tax code. Now, don't know if that's going to happen or even possible if we plant a seed with leadership, but you can tell by this kind of approach from Johnson, he's more engaged with the opportunity to deliver on promises for 14 years ago because he's made no progress whatsoever on either of them so far in his career. But not that it's all his fault, but
right.
Still.
Of course, but now he does somewhat have his dream job, so we'll see what he does with that power. Mixed this week is Senator Tammy Baldwin for a vote on her floor.
Also, the bigger question for Democrats of immigration, how do you approach it in general? So the Laken-Riley Act It will require, once I'm a President Trump, like we expect it will be, that if you are here without documentation and you commit your theft, you'd be taken in custody by DHS and all that kind of, or Homeland Security, all that kind of good stuff. Baldwin voted to advance the bill through the debate process. Remember, in the Senate, you have to have 60 votes to move past cloture, to actually debate the bill, kind of make it to the floor. Then you need a majority to pass it. Well, she voted to advance it, but voted against it in a final pass, even though like a dozen Democrats voted for the bill in the Senate, I believe. Of those, four are from states Trump won that are up for re-election in 2026. Three are from states that Trump won this past fall. So maybe a little message there, trying to, you know, be conscious of the debate nationally about immigration. But for Baldwin, talking to people, they see a downside for her because, A, 2030 is a long way away. Who knows if she's going to run at 68 years old or what the issues will be 6 years from now. But if this bill had died because she wouldn't advance it past the debate stage, that'd be a problem for her, possibly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now she can say, look, I tried. They wouldn't work with me and get the changes I wanted, so that's why I voted against it. Again, it plays the bigger issue for Democrats of, okay, how do you address immigration? Obviously, the economy is the number one thing in the election this fall. You can't ignore immigration and what's going on. And the polls that we're seeing of people who, majorities in this country who support deportation of anybody here without documentation, all this other stuff, will Trump go too far? We'll see. But for Democrats, what's your message going to be? Is it going to be that we just oppose Trump? That's not very helpful for your party right now.
Right.
Is it going to be, here's our line in the sand? And I've talked to people in the Capitol who are like, why can't Democrats just say, if you commit a violent crime, you shouldn't be here? Or if you have a criminal history that's violent, you shouldn't be here? And you talk, we've asked Democrats that question, and they kind of like hesitate to go to embrace that. And people are kind of wondering why. Like, the public is a different spot than the party is in some of these things. So for them, people I talk to, this Baldwin vote's emblematic of how do you navigate this issue? Maybe it dies out in a couple of years, but for now, this big issue, how do you navigate it?
Mm-hmm. All right. Following this week is Dr. LeVar Charleston, who was the UW-Madison chief DEI officer before he was demoted this week due to some financial woes.
Yeah, so questions about how money was being spent there. This is a bigger thing. Is this the tip of the spear about the attack on DEI that we know is coming? So Robin Voss has said, the assembly speaker, he wants DEI gone, period. Donald Trump has signed executive orders on DEI. There's all kinds of talk about getting rid of this stuff. We know about the deal that was signed or agreed to by Robin Voss and the Board of Regents, was it late 23, early 24, that they got that deal to freeze positions, reassign some people. What's next, right? This could be the a gateway to more fodder for Robin Voss. We have to get rid of all this stuff. It all needs to be gone. But also talking to Republicans, they're not happy this guy went from being paid $300,000 for the position to a backup job, in their words. So he's guaranteed a position at UW. He went back to the position. Why isn't he gone, they want to know? That kind of stuff. But again, the DEI debate is coming. The question is, how big is it going to be, and what's the implication going to be for UW in general, especially something like this happening at a very bad time for them in this debate?
Of course, keeping an eye on more executive orders, of what Congress does with DEI and the federal government, but also that audit of DEI across a university system. Voss said that's going to be coming out very soon, some hopefully before this spring and before budget negotiations get underway. So that's something also to keep our eye out, and we'll likely continue this conversation in the future. All right, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.